Hey, follower of Jesus, do you have a hard time accepting God's love and believing he is good to you and not just good to others? Do you have a hard time forgiving those who hurt you? Do you wrestle with feelings of anxiety, racing thoughts, burnout, and feel like you are at the end of your rope? Do you find yourself being in pain and stuck in the past? Or maybe this one. Do you constantly question whether it's God's voice or your feelings? If so, you are welcome here and you're in the right spot. In this podcast, you will learn how to go from knowing God's word to believing God's word. I will teach you how to hear from God, discern God's voice, process emotions and feelings, let go of control, and trust God despite what you are going through. And most importantly, how to feel again, which means walk through your pain and feelings with the Father instead of running from them. We are a spirit, have a soul, and live in a body. God cares about your body, and so do I. If you are ready to grow your relationship with God and need a starting place, a safe place to process your feelings, pull up a seat and join us at the table. I'm Jessica, someone who loves Jesus but didn't grow up in the church. For a long time, I believed that if I didn't take care of myself, then no one would. I was burned out, surviving, living by what I felt in the moment, and believed God was good, but that I was too far gone. I didn't trust God with my daily life or my basic needs, only my eternity. I believed so many lies, like my body was a tool I was to use to feel loved, and that I had to strive in everything I did to prove to others I was worthy of their acceptance and approval. I allowed the pain of my past to dictate my future and keep me stuck in the present moment. I realized that even in my mistakes, with all the choices I made, I am still loved by a God whose love isn't transactional. I am loved by a God whose love doesn't change despite when my feelings changed. What I knew about God and his love slowly transformed my heart. And I am here to share all of that with you. If he did it for me, he will and is ready to do it for you. Hey friend, welcome back to the podcast. My name is Jessica Hoddle and I'm your host. Today we have a special guest, Dr. Zoe Shaw. Now, as you might see, we don't have too many guests on the podcast anymore, but today we're talking about codependency, and I couldn't think of a better person than Dr. Zoe, who has been studying and researching a lot about shame, complex shame, healthy shame, what is guilt. So this episode is really for you if you have ever felt shame at all. And I think that could probably be all of us. Let's raise our hands. Let's be honest with ourselves, right? Or if you wrestled with guilt. Now, we go right from shame into codependency. Yes, codependency in relationships. And I think that's why I'm really excited about this talk, because we haven't talked about this on the podcast. And we also talk about interdependence with God and what it looks like. What does it look like if we are trying to be codependent with God versus interdependent with God? When we have this kind of attitude of, God, you need to give me, give me, give me. And if you don't, then I'm going to be really upset. This interview is for you if you've just wrestled with codependency, and this can even maybe even come in a form of a people pleasing a little bit, shame or guilt. Friend, I am really just excited for you to hear from Dr. Zoe Shaw today. So let's go ahead and get to the interview. Dr. Zoe, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day today. This is a topic I'm excited about only because we haven't really touched on codependency on the podcast, which is kind of crazy that we haven't talked about codependency. But hey, listen, you're going to be the person for the job to talk to us today about codependency with people and interdependence with God. But first, I think we should start with just the idea of shame. I think we have a lot of definitions in our head, right? We often tie shame and guilt together. So how would you describe shame in a way that somebody can understand it in their everyday life, maybe what they're feeling?
Yeah, absolutely. First, thank you so much, Jessica, for having me on. I'm super excited to talk about this. So I'm going to tell you what my understanding is of shame, which is a little different from plenty of other professionals. I've been doing a very deep dive into shame and the Bible as well. And what I've come to understand is that shame, there is no healthy shame. So a lot of times people will talk about those healthy shame, and then there's toxic shame or dysfunctional shame. I believe that if we look at creation and we look at what happened in the Garden of Eden, shame was used as a tool of the devil. So sin happened. And as a result, Adam and Eve discovered they were naked. And God was like, how'd you know that? Like, I didn't tell you that, right? And they learn to immediately cover up. And shame is something that makes us cover up. And the devil tells us through our sin, he gets us to sin, right? And then he tells us that we're no good, that we should be shameful, that we should feel bad about ourselves. And so shame is an excellent tool of the devil. And what shame does is shame always distances. And unfortunately, the Christian church uses shame, which I think is a tool of the devil. I think it's something that the devil has gotten into our Christianity. We use shame because we think that if someone feels shameful, then they will then feel remorse. But actually, shame always distances us from God. It pushes us away and it causes us to hide. Guilt is another thing. And I believe that when sin was created, when sin happened, the devil created shame. I think God created guilt. And guilt is something that says, I did something wrong. It's not attached to who we are as a person, right? And as a result of you doing something wrong, you can feel remorse and change, right? And guilt can lead us back to God. Shame says, I am wrong. And when you're wrong, there's nothing you can do to change that. And so then you just try to hide and distance yourself. So that's the best way that, and some people will say that's semantics. I absolutely do not agree that that's semantics in my understanding of psychology and looking at even personality disorders and how personality disorders are developed. Shame is a big part of that. It's very different from guilt. And so that's my understanding of how shame looks versus how guilt looks.
I have heard both of those definitions of, you know, shame being almost an attack on identity, like
correct,
who you are versus what you do, which might be the guilt, like the, right, the posture of what we do, doing something wrong. But I've also heard of that concept of healthy shame in the sense of maybe somebody does something wrong and you're going to them and you say, hey, what you did was wrong and it's not okay. But then I've heard it explained in the way that you always bring the positive at the end. So it's you're telling them what they did wrong and having them hold accountable, but then you're bringing it around to this positive. So is that kind of what you're talking about in the version of healthy shame?
You know, I think people look at it as different ways, but yes, someone might say that, but I'd say that's not shame. That's guilt. You're not telling the person you are a bad person. You're saying this thing you did was not okay. That's guilt. But I think even in Christianity, and sometimes, you know, even in some sectors of the country where people will say shame on you, or you should feel shame. No, I don't agree that there's anything healthy in feeling shame. That does not bring us closer to God or back to a place of health.
Yeah. You know, even just piggying back off of what you said, though, about guilt, mm-hmm, is that we actually feel the godly sorrow, which Paul, yes, talks about in the Corinthians. Yes. And so when we, right, feel sorrow is when we can actually feel the conviction, and conviction is nothing more than turning to God. Conviction, yeah, gives us a way out.
Exactly.
While condemnation basically creates a cycle of self-hatred. Right. And I think that's where the guilt, and then we get the conviction, confession now, which, right, continues to go into repentance and a changed, yeah, life. So I agree is the fact of the guilt as well, even when talking about when we sin, we feel guilt. And that's why he continues to call to go and to repent to him so that he can take the guilt because he did that. So it's, right, our choice after that to hold on to it. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And that's the healthy, that is, I think, you know, the healthy model that God set up. But the reality also is that sometimes when we sin, we feel shame. And that's the unhealthy model, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's simple shame, which I believe, like in the Brené Brown sense, is obliterated by vulnerability and that type of thing. But then, you know, there's toxic shame. And then there's something that I call complex shame, which is not as debilitating as toxic shame, but it doesn't get obliterated as easily as simple shame. Mm-hmm. And I also talk about something called shame dependency, which is attached to codependency, which, mm-hmm, has to do with our lack of our feelings of self-worth, and how the shame kind of drives that codependency.
I think in the culture that we're in, that, mm-hmm, one, I'm proud of the fact that we're becoming more aware of,
right,
kind of the side. I like the clinical and the biblical, like really kind of trying to combine them. So as we're moving into shame to start, now moving into relationships and how that affects it, talking about codependency.
Right.
Can you give us a definition of codependency that you find to be the best?
You know, I toy around with different ones. Right now, the first thing that comes to my head is that this concept of if you're not okay, we're not okay. This idea that we have to kind of take on either the responsibility or the feelings of someone else. And another thing I think that's really important when it comes to codependency is sometimes people always look at the codependent as almost like a victim. But the purpose of codependency psychologically is actually to control. And so a codependent may not look controlling, but they're attempting to control the emotional climate, right, between the two people or groups of people through attaching themselves so closely to someone.
Yeah. I was just thinking when I think of codependency, even just past and the way I was raised and seeing situations is that you need me to live. Right? Like you need me. So I need to supply you. And the only way that you're able to live is through me because I help you live. Right. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, right?
Yes, absolutely. Think about, I mean, that is so very controlling, even though the behavior doesn't appear on a kind of looking at just one behavior. It doesn't seem that way, but it is. And I think that codependents have to recognize that they have that desire to control. And it comes from a place of fear and anxiety. And it also comes from a place of shame.
What do those characteristics look like? I think that's important too, of codependency. If somebody was like, I don't really know if I'm there or how do I get out of it? But first, let's just start with the awareness. What do those characteristics look like in people that might be codependent on somebody or that might be dependent on, like, you know, each way?
right. Both ways. You know, I think one of the things is enabling. So enabling is one of kind of the classic signs of codependency. I was just in a therapy session with a client who struggles with a lot of codependency, and her husband struggles with smoking pot. And he came to her and said, you know, they're going through a very difficult time. And he said, I really wish I could smoke. And her first reaction was, I should give that to him, right? I should tell him that it's okay, even though it's so not okay because of all the things that have been going on and their life and their marriage. But the codependent part of her wanted to give that to him. And in a sense, that's still controlling because she is the source of, you know, making her husband feel better and okay in that moment in the present, right? And codependency is always about what can that behavior give you in the present? And usually it's something reinforcing that is ultimately damaging, right? And so we enable things in our relationships because it feels really good in the present to be able to give someone something that probably you shouldn't and they shouldn't have. But it ultimately hurts us. So enabling is one of the ways.
It's almost like it wants to avoid conflict. Because when somebody starts to feel uncomfortable in their body, they want to try to figure out a way to solve it. And sometimes that's codependency of like, let me just, example of yours, let me just give him what he wants. Because I know that will make him happy. And I know that can maybe solve the problem momentarily, right? Instead of this process that takes time.
Well, sometimes it's avoiding conflict. That's absolutely true. But often, though, it's really about wanting to be the source of providing somebody with something that makes them feel good, right? Wanting to be that source. So for her, she wasn't avoiding conflict by allowing him to smoke the pot. She was making him feel good, right? And being the source of allowing him to feel good in that moment.
Yeah. It's just amazing how complex just even a conversation and stuff like that of just the connection that we have with people, and we don't even realize it sometimes of, I don't want to say coping mechanisms, but what we do, like how we do want to make people happy, but we don't realize that's also, like you said, enabling somebody in that same almost sentence, you know? So let's talk about now the codependency and how somebody can begin to not be an enabler. How can we begin to, now that we're aware, or maybe we have these tendencies, what's like a baby step for somebody to be able to say, like, here's a boundary that I need to set?
That's an excellent question. And you're right also that often that enabling can look like tiptoeing around somebody to avoid conflict. That is it. That is a huge one. So, you know, the first step is figuring out that you're doing these things, figuring out that you may be enabling, that you may be tiptoeing around conflict, that you're not willing and able to speak up for yourself in a relationship because you fear that you will be rejected or lose the other person. When you start to recognize that you are continually doing things in relationships that may feel good in that moment, but that are hurting you in the relationship long term. So, you know, a first step is really starting to implement boundaries. And my client was able to do that. She was able to hear that in her head, recognize her desire to say that to him, and then not do it. And the problem is that when you don't do the thing, now you have a lot of feelings, right? Now you're feeling anxious because now I can't make him feel good. And now, you know, I can't fix his emotions, right? And so it's being able to put in a boundary and say no. And we often know when we need to say no, we just don't do it because it feels really hard. Yeah. And we don't do it because it hurts and it feels scary. And so the first step is to recognize when you're doing it and then going ahead and saying no, because often boundaries include no. Sometimes they're yeses in different ways, but learning how to say no or refrain. And then the hard part is sitting with that and saying, okay, that person can have an emotion and it doesn't have to mean that I have to have that emotion. That person can have an emotion and I can give it to them and allow them to sit and feel it. He can be frustrated. He can be angry. He can be disappointed. And it doesn't mean I have to do anything. So how am I going to sit with myself and how am I going to self-regulate and make it okay?
Yeah.
And those are things you have to figure out for yourself. You know, when I think about codependency, or rather when I think about healthy relationships, I always think about a Venn diagram. And so when we have two circles, and maybe we can get into talking about independent dependency on God, but when we have two circles that are separate, that's independence. And that's not really necessarily healthy for us as humans in the way that we need to interact. When we have two circles that are juxtaposed on top of each other, we have codependency. And that also is not healthy. And that's, I feel the same way you feel. I have to fix your feelings. But when we have two circles that intersect, right, at a nice, healthy place where we have our individuality, and then we have this place inside where we connect and we can be healthy and spend time together and grow together. That is a healthy interdependence. And that is the purpose of not necessarily the purpose, but that is the goal for healthy relationships.
I love that example that you were sharing about the diagrams and stuff. And I think one of the hardest things, and I'm going to talk to just like a covenant marriage, is what they feel is what you feel. And so one of the hardest things I think is probably what your client, you said, was married. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's the hardest thing, because you want to make your husband happy, right? You want them to be happy. But you also know that they have those things that they have to deal with too, that you can't do for them.
Right.
And that I think is the hardest. But instead of outside of a covenant marriage, can we talk just even about friendships really quick, of the codependency and friendships? Because I don't think we talk about that enough either.
I don't think we do. Not at all. You know, we tend to replicate relationships, whether it's marital relationships or friendship relationships. We replicate things that we actually need to work on, often stemming from our family of origin, right? And so it's very common to get into friendships, to have even long-lasting friendships and business relationships as well. We see the same thing in business, where we have these patterns of codependency. And, you know, I mean, ultimately, it's different because, like you said, a covenant marriage, there's a deeper commitment there, right? To stick in and figure it out and to work through it if it's at all possible. You know, in a friendship relationship, number one, I don't think we have to do that. And I don't always know that that's healthy for us to do. I know, though, that what is healthy is for us to be able to have conversations, to come to the person that we're in relationship with. And if we need to get out of a relationship, we need to work ourselves out of relationships. So when I think about healthy boundaries, sometimes people will swing the pendulum from having no boundaries right? To deciding, I'm going to have these healthy boundaries now. I'm not going to have these codependent relationships. And they swing to, I'm going to cut everybody out of my life.
Yep. See it all the time.
That is actually, yes, that is not a healthy boundary. If we have to end relationships in order to feel like we're healthy, we are still in a very codependent place, right?
Yeah.
And so what we need to learn to do is swing from no boundaries to the hard work of putting in the boundaries, right? And that's a lot harder than cutting off relationships. And so in codependent relationships, especially friendships, I always say you need to put the work in. You need to have the conversation. You need to start erecting boundaries. And if over time your partner, your friend is not able to respect the boundaries, is not able to show up, then you need to end the relationship. But often we can get to places where even with other people who are controlling or demanding or tend to take advantage, when you put in a healthy boundary, most people are going to respect it. And that is your work to do, because then you get to up-level your relationships by how you show up.
Yeah, I think boundaries is one of those words that we hear and it's like, I have to cut everybody out. You are not good for me. You're not positive. I'm going to cut you out. It's like all the memes, right? Of almost that new agey feel of, well, if they don't serve you, then you need to just get rid of them. And I'm like, you're not learning anything.
Nothing.
You know? No. And boundaries, I think the goal of boundaries is actually a healthy way of keeping people in your life.
Yes.
But at very specific levels in your life. And 100%. The more we can, I think, embrace the fact that boundaries are just keeping people at different distances, but you're still communing with them, it helps us to have healthier relationships too.
I love that you said that. I often talk to people about different rungs in your life. I think about like a tree trunk and all the different rungs, and that we should really only have like a few in our inner circle, right? Those few people who are our ride or dies. And sometimes they change throughout the course of our life, but we should have a few. And then everyone else needs to be designated to their circle, right? And of course, the further out we go on the rungs, the less close the relationship is. But if somebody has proven that they cannot be in your inner circle, it doesn't mean you chuck them out of the whole thing. You need to put them in a different, on a different rung.
Yeah, no, I agree. And to piggyback off of you again, was this is something I talk about in my spiritual growth mentorship, and I'm teaching 6 weeks in my classes at my church starting tonight.
Awesome.
Oh. And I'm talking about spheres of influence. Basically, that's what I call it is. And it's just like the circle and then another outer layer circle, and another outer layer circle, and helping people see that you can't get upset. I know this is such, I feel like we're taking a squirrel moment, but you can't get upset at somebody that if they don't invite you to a dinner, if you're not even in one of the top three circles, right?
Absolutely.
But we get upset because we're not, you know, and so understanding where we are with somebody actually helps us to communicate better, to understand our boundaries, to let go of expectations.
Yes.
Because sometimes as friends, they'll be like, well, I don't have the same benefits as your husband. Right? Like, why don't you respond to all my texts? Why don't you respond to all my calls? Right? Yes. And so then we get upset. And I think that this can lead us right into quickly interdependence with God versus codependency with God, right? So what does that look like?
I'm going to give you just the best example I can. And that's, well, there's that whole story of the Christian guy who's in the boat, right? And the boat tips over or whatever. And he's screaming to God, like, help me, help me. And a boat comes by and says, can I, you know, are you in trouble? You need help. And he's like, no, God's got me, right? And then two more people come by and try to help him. He's like, no, God's got me. And he drowns. And then he goes to heaven, of course. And
yeah. Well, it was a helicopter too. It's like, there's like a helicopter that comes. Yeah. I remember reading this story recently. It's like a helicopter comes, a boat comes. Yeah. Like all these people come, he's like, no, God's got me. And then he dies in.
Right. And then he goes to heaven and God, he's like, why didn't you save me? And God's like, I sent you three. Right. And so when I think about codependency on God, I think about expecting, number one, God to be someone who he isn't. Right. And not understanding that we are human with a soul. Right. So we are both human and we are spiritual beings. And God knows that. He's not confused like about who we are. And I think that when we look at codependency, it comes down to an expectation that God doesn't understand our humanity and an expectation that God is someone who he isn't. And when I look at a healthy dependence on God, which is, I think, what we need to have as Christians, is an understanding that God's got us, that we have to have faith, right? Mm-hmm. And that God also understands our lack of faith sometimes, but that we also have to recognize that God gives us things as humans. God gives us abilities, understanding, discernment, and that we have to walk in our humanity as well as depending fully on God. Mm-hmm. And it's different than the way that we interact in our relationships, because our relationships have to have full reciprocity in order to be healthy. We can't really give relationally to God in the same way except through our worship and through our service, right? And so we are, as children to God, we are dependent on God as his children, which is different than how we have to show up in adult relationships and reciprocity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, as we're closing in this conversation, is I think sometimes we go to God and say, I need you to do this for me. Mm-hmm. And it's still that control. It's a different, yeah. I think it's kind of a different kind of codependency, because, like, you're right, like, he is a spirit being. Right. So he connects through us in with a spiritual vessel, that the mm-hmm. way he connects. Mm-hmm. But I think we do the same thing with God. And then we get mad when God doesn't do what we want to do. But that interdependence, I believe, is that relationship too. In the most simplest form, is it's the back and forth. It's talking. It's listening. Mm-hmm. It's knowing that even when you don't get your way, that he always has the best interest, because he's always good. He is not outside of good. He is 100% good, you know, fully and holy God. Yeah. So, Dr. Zoe, thank you so much just for your time and being with us today and sharing this topic. Where do you want them to find you or to follow you, or what resources do you have for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So my hangout place is on Instagram, and it's at the handle Dr. Zoe Shaw. And I also have a podcast that I invite anyone to listen to. It's called Stronger in the Difficult Places. And I really talk about issues of codependency, shame, difficult relationships, really about how you can work on yourself and fixing yourself, because that's the only person you can fix, and how the ripple effect is that you change relationships.
Perfect. I'll make sure to have all the links for them in the show notes below. But again, Dr. Zoe, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. I pray that it encouraged you, that it blessed you, but most importantly, that it inspired you and set you in to motion. I want you to be a person that feels like they have the steps to move in the next direction, that you know that it's possible to heal with God, and that you don't have to live in shame and guilt anymore. If this episode blessed you, I would love for you to share it with somebody else, encourage them in their journey to growing their relationship with God and healing emotionally. Also, I would love for you to take 30 seconds of your time to leave a review on the podcast. It actually helps me to know what you're enjoying about this podcast, so I can continue to keep showing up and answering the questions that you have for me. Last but not least, I'd love for you just to join us in the Facebook community. Every week we're in there and I'm connecting and I'm talking with you, and it's a place where I get to go deeper with you as well. So in the meantime, I'll see you in the Facebook group. Thanks so much again for sharing this episode and leaving a review.